thank you for coming out on such short notice. We appreciate it. You won't be disappointed. It's a very exciting day, and I would like to tell you quickly how events will unfold. I'm going to introduce the university's chancellor, Henry Yang, who will be introducing our two Nobelists. Each will speak briefly in turn, and then you will have an opportunity for your questions, probably about 30 minutes or so, following which you can try to get a little individual time with the Nobelists as your schedules allow. So without any more ado, I'd like to introduce the chancellor, Henry T. Yang.
Thank you for all of you who are here. This is a glorious day in UC Santa Barbara's history. To have two faculty colleagues receive two Nobel Prizes, one in physics and one in chemistry, on the same day is truly wonderful news for UCSB and for research. I just cannot find a proper adjective to describe the amount of happy energy that flows around the campus today. And it is a testament to the interdisciplinary nature of so much of the research on this campus. Pioneering research that cuts across the disciplines has become the hallmark of research at UC Santa Barbara. Now, it is my personal honor and privilege, and also our institutional honor and privilege, to present to you Professor Herbert Kroemer, who shares the Nobel Prize in Physics for developing semiconductor heterostructures used in high-speed and optoelectronics. Professor Kroemer, would you stand for a minute? Mrs. Kroemer could not attend, but she will join us in many future celebrations. It is also my personal honor and privilege, and our institutional honor and privilege, to present to you Professor Alan J. Heeger, who shares the Nobel Prize in Chemistry for the discovery and the development of conductive polymers. And Mrs. Heeger, since chemistry comes before physics in the alphabet, and also Heeger comes before Kroemer alphabetically, I thought I would turn first to Dr. Heeger.
That was very diplomatic. Thank you so much. Well, first, obviously, I want to thank you all for coming. I would like to recognize my two colleagues. It's just a great thing that this prize was shared with my colleague Ellen McDiarmid at Penn and Hideki Shirakawa in Tokyo. We came together in a truly interdisciplinary scientific collaboration in the middle-late 70s when this work began. We've worked together, stayed good friends ever since, and it's just a great pleasure that to be able to share this prize with them. It's fantastic. The next point, I suppose, is everybody always wants to know, did you expect it? Did you know about it? No. And of course, the answer is no. I didn't know about it. Did you ever think about it? Maybe. as the field progressed, and as the scientific community that surrounds this field of as we call it, synthetic metals or conducting polymers, as it grew, people would tell me, colleagues all over the world would tell me, you know, this is going to happen. So it's 25 years, you know. And I finally decided I had to take things a little bit into my own hands. So I not being a superstitious person, of course, I bought this I bought this little tie because my good friend and colleague Walter Cohn has always set an example for me. And as many of you know, Walter always wears such a tie. So now, such a bello. So, I thought if anything might do the trick, this would do it. And unfortunately, Walter's not here, but I thank him for all the good times we've had and for the good luck. And of course, next is this is Rude. Uh-oh. Years. Well, I'm not going to make it on that one. So we get to go to Sweden together, and that's going to be fun. What else to say? Congratulations to her. Some people think we look alike. It's a really special thing for me to get this prize in chemistry. We are what we have become. I started out as a physicist. I still think like a physicist. But over the course of the years, when people have asked me, what do you do? I'm a chemist. But I live in this interdisciplinary world between physics and chemistry. That's where progress will be made, I think, in science in the coming decades, not just between physics and chemistry, but between disciplines. I think reaching out across disciplines has for me always been a very important part of my scientific life, and I think that is the key to what we accomplished and the key to what this prize is given for. Thank you. Any questions? All right.
How can you top that? And if you cannot top it, you better not even try, so I won't. I do want to say a few words about the other two recipients of the physics prize. Jack Kilby, who ended up at half the prize, is of course one of the two originators of the integrated circuit. And of course, you all know what integrated circuits mean in context of computers and what have you. They are really the heart of much of today's electronic technology. Jack was not alone in this one. Bob Morris, almost simultaneously with very similar work, but Bob Morris is unfortunately no longer alive. So Jack is the one of the secrets. I myself share the prize with Jerez Alferov in St. Petersburg for an area that is really complementary to integrated circuits, the field of heterostructures. And I'm very happy about Jerez's partnership in this one. We had essentially identical ideas at essentially the same time back in the early 60s the late 50s, started in the late 50s. At that time, of course, we were on opposite sides of the Iron Curtain, but we got to meet later on, and we're very good friends. And so I'm very happy about it, too. Well, you just heard that Alan is the second physicist who gets converted into a chemist. This is actually the historical precedent that I rather for you got the Nobel Prize in chemistry and the other physicists. So they're very surprised that I discovered that even from physical chemistry. Some of you probably think of me as an engineer. Well, I'm professor of engineering, but my PhD is actually in theoretical physics. So, although I have, I hate to admit that one because I do not live up. I do not live up to what my colleagues here, particularly in this building, consider theoretical physics. But I ended up very, very early in applying the training of a physicist to what is basically applied physics. And those of you who are familiar with the Nobel statutes know that applied applications always play a role are supposed to play a role in the awards. And so, as I said, this all goes back as many years, more years than I like to remember. It started, my own first contribution came in 1957, when I ended up with the idea, well, if you put two different semiconductors together into a single crystalline structure, that there's an interface, that may be an abrupt interface, it may be a graded interface. And at that interface, a few things happen, they do not happen in the bulk semiconductors. Basically, the gradient in the energy gap acts as a force. And I realized that this was a very universal new design principle for devices, which could, first of all, improve existing devices. More important, certainly to me, more important was the idea that you might be able to do things with this design principle that simply couldn't be done without it. And of course, that is where the creation came in 1963, at least the conceptual creation came in 1963, in the form of the idea of the double heterostructure laser. And anybody who knows something about semiconductor diode lasers knows that this is the principle by which the art is. It has been elaborated on by many refinements in the years since then. But that is the idea without which they would not exist. And well, that's basically all I can say, but I will of course be happy to submit to interrogation later on.
Before your questions, I just want to point out that at a table just out in the foyer, there are background statements about the professors. The Swedish Academy's release about this. The copies of the CVs of the two professors. So if we run out in time, we'll run off some more. So just stand by, and I know you'll need that information. Please speak loudly in asking your question and indicate to whom you are addressing the question. And you might both be prepared to speak up in response.
My answer is very similar. Let's put it this way. I have a theory that nobody who gets the Nobel Prize is totally surprised by it. You know, presumably, about the significance of your work. You're not going to be astonished when others suddenly recognize the significance. I have occasionally thought about it. But I certainly didn't expect it this year. If you want to say, I felt that this was no longer in the running. And I must admit that last night, the thought came to me, what would happen if I would get a phone call at 3 o'clock at night? But then they said, come on, wake up. This is silly. And in fact, when the phone call up, not at 3 o'clock, but at 2:30, it took me a few seconds to recognize what was going on. And I had a sneaking suspicion for a short while that this was a hoax that some students might be playing on me. And of course, anybody can fake an accent, but when the third person came on the telephone, somebody I knew personally, and I know his accent, and I realized it was real.
Well, it's been critical. I mean, what's happened here over the last 20 years is quite remarkable. It's not an accident that there are two Nobel Prizes here today. It was built. I know in the physics department we spent many hours looking and talking about and looking for the best people and nothing but the best people. And as a result of that, we built a really world-class, fine department, one of the top in the country. Same thing is true in materials. So the university has been very special. As I personally am concerned, I think it's been the most productive and creative period in my life. Well, when I came, how do you know? How do you know? No, but when I came here, UC Santa Barbara was often known as UC Southern Beach. And when I came out, I brought people with me and said, let's check this place out. Can you really do science here? And, looked good. I mean, facilities were here, and it looked like a place where you could really do science. Then I looked around, and I said, I've got a little work here. Beach is 100 meters away. Sky is beautiful. The girls are beautiful. Everything is beautiful. No one will work here. Students will never be in the lab. But it's not true. It's a great place. There's a real work ethic here that I don't think I can explain. It's a wonderful place to live, of course, but it's been a great place to do science. It's a question that doesn't need an answer. Obvious.
I happen to ask myself that question.
You ask it?
I simply hope that it will not change me.
Professor, does everybody want to know always like what the winner
plan to? That has been the least of my worries at this point. right now I want to know how I survived this day.
Well, the 2 months from today is the prize. When we go is, I guess, roughly a week ahead of time. Ruth and I have talked about what we would do with this money, and we greatly value, or I should say, she certainly agrees with me with the importance of interdisciplinary science, and we want to work with Henry. We want to try to create some kind of a way, endow a chair, something of that kind, to make this kind of thing happen in the future.
It doesn't look in your
variety. No,
we haven't looked as much alike, though. You want to be thought?
All right. All right. Everybody knows by now what plastics are, what polymers are. Polymers are macromolecules in which a given repeat unit is
given structural units, repeated many, many times, often millions of times. You're all familiar with the common polymers, such as synthetic polymers, such as nylon, many of the things that we use in apparel and for structural materials. These are all around us. Again, and the use of polymers by man goes back before, long before they were synthesized. I mean, leather is a polymer. Cement is a polymer. But of course, in the middle part of the 20th century, synthetic polymers became very important. The name Carruthers, who was the first inventor of nylon, comes to mind. But polymers, plastics, for all their use, and in fact, polymers are the most used materials today in the world, by weight even. And the density of a polymer is about one, whereas metal, steel, etc. is much heavier. So they're all around us. But polymers were not electronic materials. They were insulators. No one thought of the possibility even that you could you're getting metals and semiconductors out of these materials. In the 70s, there was a lot of thinking about the nature of the metallic state, about the metal insulator transition, about some crazy mathematical things of metals in one dimension, and that's kind of how we got into it. But the bottom line is that we understood what structural units you need to synthesize, the nature of those structural units to make a repeat and make a polymer, such that you could turn these polymers into, such that you could turn polymers into metals and semiconductors, and at the same time retain the wonderful features of polymers, the fact that they can be processed so easily, they can be melted, they can be put in solution, and the fact that they are flexible and can be made into fibers, etc. So it's this combination of properties which makes the materials so important. I think it's the understanding of the a deep understanding of the metallic state and the structural features of the molecular units which are required to get electronic properties that you want that led to this to this rise in chemistry. That was too long. Sorry.
Well, I think I already explained briefly what. My work was about the impact is really that heterostructures are a design principle that is not only used in the kind of practical devices like lasers, and of course I'm sure you're aware of the numerous applications of solid state lasers, from compact displays to fiber communications, but it has also become the backbone of much of semiconductor physics research. If you ask what is going on in semiconductor physics, you inevitably find structures that are heterostructures. So it is a continuum from practical devices, very practical devices, to basic research. And I find this extraordinarily exciting. To live and be a member of this continuum, who has contributed to both ends of the continuum. That's has been very, very satisfying. And so this is not something, I think, the heterostructure is not something that has come to an end now. Now we have the important devices. And I flatly refuse to speculate what it might lead to, because I fundamentally believe that this sort of thing cannot be predicted.
This is one of the open problems in the world. For instance, with respect to the skills from the years, and it's not a good book.
Awesome.
Probably the right word.
Another question? We have time for just a couple more.
If not, then thank you all for coming, and...
Gentlemen, can we get the two of you together right here? Sort of behind?
Is everybody okay behind me?